Hello everyone, I'm Brian Zimmerman, Custom Content Editor with Becker's Healthcare. Thank you for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Today, I am pleased to be joined by our guest as we discuss what community hospitals are looking for in an EHR. We are thrilled to be joined by a fantastic leader from Allscripts for this discussion, Dr. Christopher Caggiano, Clinical Principal at Allscripts. Dr. Caggiano, thank you for talking with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here and I appreciate your time.
Great. So with that, let's jump into the conversation. The first question I have for you is, what are some unique challenges facing community hospitals today, and how can technology help these organizations overcome these issues?
Well, Brian, I think there's a number of issues, obviously, but a lot of it centers around the fact that community hospitals have the same patients, and to a large extent, as the larger academic centers, often patients present to the community first and then are referred on to academic centers for very complex care. But at the basis, they're still taking care of their patients, and those patients do still get very sick. And what the community hospital is often lacking is the cohesive set of support. And what I mean by that is a community hospital has the hospital. They may have a staff of, say, hospitalists or other primarily salaried clinicians within their walls. But once you step outside of those walls, you have community practices, which may be one or two physician groups acting independently who want to maintain their independence. And you also have groups that are affiliated with the hospital itself and primarily refer patients into the hospital there. Some physicians may see patients in their office only. Some of them admit patients to the hospital and see those patients in the hospital. Some of them admit to the hospital, but then the hospitalist might take care of their patients. And so you have a big milieu of care settings that need to coordinate care amongst themselves. And with the use of technology, we're able to better integrate that care as time goes forward. I mean, it used to be just a phone call between a primary care physician and a hospitalist, per se, that might lead to that admission and discuss everything that needs to be done for that patient. But unfortunately, a simple phone call nowadays doesn't get anybody paid for that, right? You've got a document against it. So the easier that we could make that transition to capture not only the documentation, but also the necessary communication between those providers is very important. And it's not as easy in a community setting where you have a complete mix of affiliated and non-affiliated physicians, both in the outpatient and the inpatient world, each with their own initiatives and their own driving forces that they're driving to. It might be a little bit less standardized, shall we say, than the academic setting or the larger enterprise systems, which, for lack of better terms, have more control over their providers, and they're able to hold those providers more accountable simply because they're just not as independent. Along with that challenge of how do you bring these people together comes the challenge of leadership. When you're in a community setting, especially the smaller communities, you may be blessed with a great leader or two or three in that community, and they exist in every community. It's a matter of finding them and growing them from within that sometimes becomes challenging. If you're in a rural setting, well away from a city, not everybody has, you know, their motivating factor to live out in that region. So it's hard sometimes to find the appropriate leaders. And then you add on top of that, not only leaders who are clinical, but then leaders who have technology backgrounds to bring the initiatives of the C-suite and of the physician community together. That's very difficult to come by in the more rural settings in this country. And if an organization has it, they want to keep it. But I think that, you know, not technology directly helping overcome this, but at least the vendors in the technology space are seeing more and more the need to provide leadership in some form, either through outsourcing leaders or outsourcing educators who can help an organization grow a great leader. That I think is something that technology vendors are really starting to look at. It's historically been the purview of third-party support or services organizations to do that. But I think the vendors are getting a little bit more involved as technology starts to run away and get more complex. The other challenges that I see facing the community hospitals as regard to that, also tag on to leadership, is it's very hard to get a clinician who has a private practice and has motivation factors of getting to their office and doing their office hours on time and still getting home on time and not bringing their work home with them. It's hard to get physicians in that space to buy in to technology and then also become leaders in that space to bring along their cohorts with them, essentially being their colleague and their friend, but yet holding them accountable. That's just hard to find anywhere, but it's especially hard to find in the community space where we all have different motivating factors. Now, it's not really a unique challenge, but a challenge that I do see perhaps more in the community just because their governance structure for electronic health records hasn't been set up as thoroughly and as with as many resources as larger academic centers can come up with, is we don't see a lot of data governance. And it's very important. And we always talk about having the right data at the right place at the right time so that you can make the right decisions. Well, a very simple example, if you have four different places where someone may chart something as simple as, say, blood pressure, and each one of those places might allow you to add notes as to what position the patient was in when that blood pressure was taken. And some of those may be free-texted. Some of those might be predefined and codifiable. If you have that situation, then you have a hard time trusting that data because you don't know exactly where that was obtained, how it was obtained, and you certainly can't drive that data on the background to make statistical inferences and, you know, even start the presumption of beginning to use predictive analytics. That also falls to the financial side of an organization, right? If the CFO can't trust the numbers data that they're getting because they can't trust how that data was put in, you know, how many decimal places, to what precision is it being used, what kind of data is it? I mean, is it being entered as dollars and cents or just whole numbers? It goes all the way down to the definition of the data and then following that up with data governance. As community hospitals are becoming more sophisticated in the EHR space, they're seeing this need, but a lot of them don't really have the resources to do it. And then on top of that, a direction, you know, a strategic direction of where they want to bring their data governance. And anywhere from setting up data governance committees to the concept of the data stewardship and then the creation of simple data dictionaries. This is a blood pressure. It is two numbers, a systolic and a diastolic. Those numbers are recorded to this precision. They are used in this report or reports or visualizations. And the person who's responsible for that on each unit of the floor will be the data steward for that nursing unit. And that might be a nurse. It might be a technician. It could be a clerk, right? But somebody from the point of actually entering that data to following it all the way through the process to being used in statistical analysis, that's called data governance. And we're not seeing a lot of it in the community. It's starting to come out, but it's going to be incredibly important going forward. And again, technology companies can help you with that as far as setting it up. The vision to have it is something that needs to be set by the leadership in the community hospitals. And they can learn from the academic centers in that regard as well. As far as unique challenges facing community hospitals, I think we have to talk about lack of access. And, you know, when lay people hear about lack of access, they mean, well, there's nobody to go to get treated. Or they right away think about insurance reasons. You know, I can't go to the doctor because it's going to cost too much money. Well, my background is in emergency medicine, and I can tell you that anybody arriving in an emergency department in this country is guaranteed that they will get a medical screening examination for, you know, life and limb threatening conditions, pregnancy, and you know, imminent delivery, and to be stabilized. So they will receive that kind of care. But the challenge is to treat them before they get to the point of needing to go to the emergency department. And that's where, when we talk about lack of access, that's where this comes in. It might be something as seemingly simple as just getting a ride to the hospital, or not to the hospital, maybe just to the clinic, so that they can be seen and their blood pressure and blood sugars can be managed before they end up in dire straits and having to get to the emergency department. And, you know, we're seeing technology play a part here, because look at all how ride sharing has changed society in general, and how we now get back and forth and go places. It's changed drastically. You don't have to call up a friend to get a ride. You can just get an app on your phone. Well, in the community setting, even in the rural areas, cell phone service is pretty ubiquitous in most areas. And we're seeing partnerships between ride-sharing companies and EHR vendors, so that if a patient is being scheduled for an appointment at a clinic, they can simply ask, do you have a ride to the clinic? If the answer is no, then that ride can be set up with one or two selections on a screen, and then Medicare will actually incorporate and pay for that ride to the clinic, because there's millions of dollars being lost every year in care that can be rendered and prevent these people from getting sick. So I think that's coming to the community setting. The flip side of that is, well, in some rural areas, there may only be one or two ride-sharing cars, literally, and that's going to, you know, hamper that a little bit. But I think as it becomes more popular, we'll see it being used more. The other thing that I'm seeing is just a lack of quantity and quality of community-based resources. Patients having to wait a month for an appointment is not acceptable. And through the use of physician extenders, you know, primarily advanced practice clinicians such as nurse practitioners and PAs, physician offices and practices are able to extend themselves to see more patients. And that can be subsidized to some degree by the hospital as well. But I think technology is really starting to help with the use of telehealth. And, you know, incorporating telehealth into the EHR, into the ability to bill for a telehealth visit into the EHR or into the financial portion of the system is really paramount to having this take off. Because it enables the provider to get to the patient in any form, whether it's looking at them on a phone, such as a Skype conversation, or if it's just communication via text to make sure your appointment is still valid. If it's you know, pharmacies, they're actually reaching out. There are companies now that will reach out directly to the patient. The patient's just discharged from the hospital. The pharmacist can actually reach out to them using telehealth and show them pictures of their pills and say, did you take the blue pill today? You need to take the blue pill every morning at 9 a.m. and go through that way. And it's bidirectional. So there are pill boxes now that if the patient opens up the pill box and takes the pill out, then the system at least knows that the pill is out of the box, and we assume the patient took it. I mean, we can't yet determine if the patient actually took the pill. But that type of technology is available, and it's coming out more into the community. And I think it's all going to tie back to the need to tie this into population-based healthcare and value-based healthcare so that we're keeping patients out of the hospital. We don't want them to get so sick that they need to go to the hospital. We want to treat those conditions before they get to the hospital. And that's where I think technology is really starting to help the community-based systems.
I think that was an excellent breakdown of, you know, some very serious challenges there, but technology does seem to be offering sort of a path forward, and I, you know, improving access to care is huge. Appreciate that. My next question here is, EHRs have traditionally been priced and scaled for larger hospitals and health systems. How can community hospitals with limited resources sensibly and effectively invest in EHR technology?
That's an interesting question. Traditionally, as you say, they've been priced and scaled for larger hospitals. But even between vendors, the pricing is based on different things. So sometimes it will be based on the operating expense of an enterprise. Sometimes it's based on the number of providers or prescribers in an organization. That's a little rarer. Sometimes it's based on the number of beds. And sometimes it's also based on the number of patient encounters. So there's various models out there, and none of them are, shall we say, cheap, but some are more affordable than the others. And the fact is, you know, without really good data underlying your organization's system, especially the financial side, without good data there, determining an actual return on investment is extremely difficult. If you spend $10 million on an EHR, well, what is that going to give me 10 years down the road? Putting a number on that is very difficult. But if an organization takes the time to invest in data governance, especially around the financial side, you can at least trust what numbers you have and go forward. Now, the traditional pricing models are changing, and a lot of that is due to the availability of software as a service-based systems. It used to be that the only way to get an EHR is to have a bunch of servers on site and maintain those servers and have people staffing them and loading all of your EHR and all of your data on site. Then that started to move to remote hosted systems, which is, there's still a very big play out there where instead of maintaining that system on your hospital premises, you have the vendor or somebody maintain that system somewhere else. So you're just paying them on a stable payment model, which then you can then predict against, right? If you're on site and something happens to the servers, you have a disaster or fire or something like that, things you can't predict, you have issues with backup, you have issues with cost to rebuild that and the cost of delay of your services because your systems are going to be down for a while. Going to remote hosted type situation, you have the knowledge that you have it's backed up. Depending on how much you want to spend on it, you can have immediate disaster recovery if you need it. And so that's afforded quite a bit. The SaaS or software as a service model is more like I like to think of it as an app on your phone. You know, when you use a telephone app to do anything, it's there residing somewhere else, but you're using it to access other data. And there's good and bad with that. The good thing is it's available. It's easy to price because you can actually price it by how many times you touch it. Also by how many patient encounters that you use. There's various ways to price that. The bad part is it can just be turned off. So what do you do in that situation where you're with a vendor whom perhaps you haven't vetted completely or they were not forthcoming with their plans with you, and maybe that vendor decides that they're going to sunset something and get rid of it? You're protected legally for, I think the government says 7 years for an EHR, that they have to provide some support. But they still could turn off a lot of the interface to the system. And you need to be certain that that SaaS-based system and that company is going to be around. So that's an added risk to you that you have to build into whatever you're doing. You need to have contingency plans ready to deal with that type of a thing. And, you know, I've found, at least I've worked on both sides, both in the software industry and in the community and academic-based hospital setting, is, you know, vendors, yes, they want to sell you stuff and they want to make money. But if you're honest and transparent with them, you should be able to ask them, on what is your pricing based? And if the, you know, if the vendor comes back and says, well, it's based on your number of providers, well, then ask them, well, how do you define a provider? I mean, does that include your licensed physicians? Does it include anybody writing a prescription? Or does it include your, you know, your providers such as LPNs, right? They're licensed. And are you basing that price based on them as well? So you may be able to work something out with the vendor if you know how they're basing their prices. Whether or not you want to share as an organization with that vendor all of your information is totally up to you. I think that, you know, number one, looking seriously at whether or not you want to step into the software as a service type situation or using remote hosting to both of those will stabilize your maintenance costs so you know what they're going to be versus keeping everything on site. That's something that you really need to look at as a community hospital. And I'm thinking more and more the recommendation from my side would be get the servers out of your hospital, right? And let somebody else worry about that. Because you're not only worrying about the regular software and EHR type work, but cybersecurity as well. And if you can outsource that cybersecurity, as much of it that can be done within the EHR proper, that's a bonus to you. Because keeping up with that is a full-time job for one or more people at your institution that can be offloaded to the vendor or the vendor of your remote hosting, whichever way you want to look at it. The other way to look at pricing that's changing is subscription models. It used to be that the only way to do this was to go out and make a huge upfront investment and then continue to pay maintenance and support. Subscription models do exist now for multiple EHRs. With a subscription model, you basically, usually I should say, either pay by the prescriber or by the number of patients that you have in your community. It's either community-based or encounter-based. But the subscription model, you have to weigh that against capitalization. If you need to have a big capital outlay, go ahead and capitalize it and pay for it up front. But if you want just a predictive monthly subscription invoice coming in that you know is based upon X, like the number of providers, you know what you expect your growth rate to be. So you can predict what your cost of that outlay for your EHR is going to be. And that's new models, new modeling that's coming in to the EHR vendor space, which I think is going to help community models. Another way to look at EHRs is community-based models in general. Used to be thought that you had to have your own EHR at your hospital. Well, why? If that EHR could be based in, you know, one central area or one state, or maybe not even in this country, but probably in this country, why does my hospital and a community hospital 200 miles away that's really not in my catchment area, and another one that's 100 miles away that's not in my catchment area either, why can't we come together and work collaboratively with one EHR, one instance of an EHR, where if we can separate our financial data but keep our clinical data together, why can't we do that? And there's nothing stopping organizations from doing that, and some vendors have models that allow that. So that's the way that things are changing. Your big question then becomes one of content. You know, who controls the content, and how do you have governance over the content? And by content, I mean kind of everything from formulary to order sets, to documentation templates for providers and nurses, and technicians and ancillaries. So there's a lot of work in the background as far as governance and leadership that has to happen, but you could put together three or four hospitals in a region to share an EHR. And it has been done, and I think it's something that has yet to be determined whether or not it's going to become a good model, and a lot of that's going to depend on just how we make it function. But technologically, the possibility is there. The other thing that I would look at is not just the cost of the EHR, but what the community hospital is doing in the background to facilitate the proper use, care and feeding of that EHR when it comes to data. And I would say that, an investment that we don't see enough of is the upfront investment to provide at the elbow, long-term, there all the time support for your clinicians. A lot of smaller hospitals have to rely on their IT department to do that. And making the investment for one or two FTEs to provide that clinical-based, at the knowledge, at the ready, always on demand support, whether it be, right sitting down next to them and saying, no, if you click here, it's a lot faster and more efficient to get through your workflow. Or if it's something such as a pop-up window that comes up on the computer screen with a video chat with someone who can take control of your screen and immediately walk a clinician through whatever issue they're having with the EHR. I think that type of investment is something that we need to see more of, because if you can improve adoption, improve your data integrity, improve your clinicians' efficiency, and give them a little education along the way, that's going to pay off in spades down the road, because you're going to have better data, and you're going to be able to interpret that data at all levels, not only from a patient safety standpoint, but all the way up to strategic decision-making by the investment upfront. And it's difficult, especially if you get into rural America, it's difficult to find people who have an interest in doing this. But vendors do have services where you can outsource people like this, at least to get your system going and started. I've seen a couple successful programs now that really this has made a big difference. And your data gets better. And when your data is better, you can thrive your organization with it. And I think as far as the pricing, that pretty much sums that up. Yeah, when you talk about pricing, we need to consider that investment of people that a lot of times a vendor will not throw into the bag because it just adds cost from their aspect. But, I think vendors need to be more prescriptive and say you will need these resources to help and assist. And I think we're starting to see a little bit more of that.
I think those comments sort of actually bleed into my next question a little bit. You talk about the, sort of delivering on-demand support to clinicians. So beyond affordability, what should community hospitals look for in an EHR?
The big thing now is integration of acute and ambulatory care domains. And by integration, I don't mean interfaced. I mean actually integrated, using the same database for all of that data. Because for value-based care and population management and health maintenance, if you're working in silos between the ambulatory space and the inpatient space, it's just all that more difficult to bring care to the next higher level, where, if a patient is in the hospital but is also seen in the ambulatory space, and you notice that when they're in the hospital that they have to have things done for their routine health maintenance that will help prevent readmissions or prevent them from ending up in the emergency department 6 months from now, then you should be able to address those things in the hospital if needed, and at least be able to identify that those things are needed. And vice versa, when a patient gets out of the hospital, well, the ambulatory physician needs to have access to all of that data. And they also need to be able to communicate back to the hospital. So true integration between the inpatient and the outpatient space is something that, you know, the major vendors have, and I think is very important and something that community hospitals should be looking for. Because they're going to have to manage these patients as communities. And if their systems aren't integrated, they need to look at how they're going to interface them very tightly going forward. The other usability is given, that's nothing different between community hospitals and academic centers. Your EHR should be workflow-based in its design and address the common things that you need to do on a day-to-day basis. Otherwise, your clinicians aren't going to adopt it and use it. That's just pretty simple, but that's not unique to community hospitals. The community hospitals also need to look at the more advanced applications or integrations that EHRs are having. You know, academic centers need, say, precision medicine because of what they do, but there's no reason why a community hospital shouldn't need that as well. If you're treating simple cancers, you should be using the genetic makeup of that patient to determine their care. If you're not, you're falling behind the eight ball. And EHRs have the ability to incorporate this data, whether it's from another solution that sits on top of the EHR to something that might be, you know, more integrated than actually direct care. But the incorporation of precision medicine is becoming more and more important. And honestly, I think that precision medicine is going to play more of a role in the holistic type health maintenance of populations than we're seeing right now. I mean, if we can identify those conditions which are going to creep up in somebody's lifetime and start to prevent them before they start to creep up, well, then you have a winning combination. So incorporation of precision medicine is something to look at to make sure the vendor has either the ability to do that or the vision to drive towards that. There's something to look forward to when you're making that decision with an EHR. Obviously, you need the vendor to be able to keep up with regulatory requirements. And, you know, academic centers and bigger systems have to deal with some different regulatory requirements than the community space does. And in a lot of areas, especially in rural medicine and critical access hospitals, the regulatory requirements there are more difficult to get around for an EHR than in the larger systems. So you want to look for that vendor to have a good track record of dealing with the regulatory requirements in that space that you're in. And then, you know, on top of that, the regulatory requirements often have some requirement to do with connected care, you know, in particular the interoperability requirements now that are used to be called meaningful use. A lot of that is getting into connected type care. And when you look at connected care, you want that ability to share information across vendors. Not doing you much good if you can share your information with other hospitals, but only if they're using the same system you are. That is not always very helpful. But unfortunately, it's the world we live in. But you want to make sure that the important information that you need to share to identify what condition the patient has, what's been done for them, and what your plan is for the future, you want to make sure that that interoperability exists with whatever vendor you choose, and that they interact with other vendors in a bi-directional fashion. It's no good if a vendor can send you information or can take your information, but they're not going to send you anything back. And that's not good. It's got to be bi-directional. And so that's worth investigating as a community hospital.
Thank you. And you've spoken quite a bit about sort of, you know, what a vendor partnership, what a productive and effective one looks like. I'm wondering if you could push a little bit more, though, on just how can community hospitals ensure they're partnering with vendors that are going to sort of support their overall organizational goals?
Right. I think accountability is probably the number one thing on my list there. If you put in the hand of somebody, let's say a CIO working at a hospital, you're holding that vendor accountable to have an operating system that doesn't go down all the time. They're meeting their SLAs. They're not causing harm, et cetera, right? But I think also the vendor needs to be able to hold you accountable, because if a vendor gives you this really great product with functionality that is, you know, way beyond what you may think you need or the capabilities that you've had in the past, and you as an organization don't take advantage of that and engage not only the vendor but your own resources in looking at the workflows that are going to change, educating those workflows, and making sure that those workflows change to embrace that new capability, then the vendor, you know, is kind of in a catch-22. They've provided this for you out of information that they've gleaned as things that will bring value to their customer base. They provided you the ability to do it, and yet you don't take advantage of it. And what that creates is a gap as time goes on. Let's say the vendor creates this really good functionality for interoperability, and 2 years down the road, you've had this capability, but you don't use it. And now a regulatory requirement comes out that says you have to have it. Well, everybody is scrambling then at the organization to figure out, number one, if the vendor ever provided it to them, and number two, what's the best practice workflow, and number three, how do we implement it, and oh my gosh, we have to get this done by next month. So I think that you as an organization need to hold yourself accountable to work with the vendor and work with what the vendor is providing you, so that you're both on the same page. You're both in lockstep as time progresses to reach your ultimate goals, not only from an EHR standpoint, but from, you know, the big picture strategic goals of your organization, right? And EHR, remember, doesn't have to be on site. And if your organization has the vision that, hey, we're going to affiliate and we're going to join another hospital or two, or we're going to merge with three other hospitals, or we're going to buy another hospital, or we're going to buy all these practices, that's great. Include the EHR vendor in that discussion and be transparent so that everybody can grow together rather than, you know, seeing it become adversarial, as, you know, a facility may buy up some practices. They never communicated that to the EHR vendor, and they expected that after they bought the practices, they go to the EHR vendor and say, oh, well, look, we have all these practices now. We need to get the EHR in there. And then the vendor says, we never planned for this. You never told us about it. And, you know, the cost model is going to be more now because, you know, no one complained for it. So that transparency is as transparent as you can be. I mean, you obviously don't want to give up all the numbers, but from a leadership perspective, be transparent with that vendor and expect that transparency back from that vendor. And in the same token, hold each other accountable. It can't be a one-way blame game on either side. It's got to be holding them accountable. And that's one of the most important things that you can do to ensure vendor participation. Now, as an organization, you know, I can tell you, vendors love to have spokespeople, people who can come to a regional event or a national event and speak on behalf of their experience with a vendor. It doesn't have to be, oh my gosh, this EHR is the best thing in the world. It's maybe just taking one aspect of that EHR that, you know, maybe it was a case that came up at your hospital, and you talked to the vendor about it, and they worked with you to build something better. Something as simple as that goes a long way with a vendor. And building that relationship can also work two ways, right? I mean, the vendor can come into your hospital and provide a, you know, a day of, hey, this is our the major upgrades to the EHR. Come on and see what's going on and help us enhance the product to build things that will bring you value, right? So, you know, participation with the vendor, not only as a spokes hospital or a spokesperson or a reference site, but also the bidirectionality of that. Get the vendor involved on site with your organization so they get to know you. Your individual employees get to see that the vendor is involved and is listening to them. And then the vendor in turn should be taking those ideas, determining what's the value to the organization, what's the value to our customers at large, and is it worth the time and effort for us to build that into our EHR? And it's the only way it's going to grow. And that partnership can grow, you know, in a bidirectional fashion based upon those couple things. But that's how I would recommend. Be transparent, hold each other accountable, and, you know, truly put the time in to partner with them, help each other out.
So transparency, accountability, and time there sounds like are the keys. And I sort of want to circle back to some comments you made earlier. You mentioned adoption really being key here, physician adoption. And so how can organizations achieve physician buy-in when introducing new technologies such as an EHR?
Yeah. Well, if we can answer that question on this, I'd be very surprised. That is an ongoing discussion, but it really, really comes down to leadership, leadership, leadership. And not just leadership that comes in and lays down the law, but good leadership. Someone who can bring together the initiatives of the C-suite with the initiatives of the medical staff. And somebody who knows the motivation of the medical staff. And that can vary, right? I mean, altruistically, what's the motivation of the medical staff? Well, we want to treat our patients safely and give them the best care possible. That sounds great. But, you know, they're humans on the other side of it. And their other motivational factors might be, look, my kid's got a baseball game every Thursday at 4:30 p.m. And I really want to be there. And, you know, if we don't address those things as organizations, then we're adding to clinician burden and leading to physician burnout. So, you know, good leadership should be able to identify individually with their constituents of, you know, what are their motivating factors that will help their work-life balance so that after taking care of themselves, they can take care of others. And that type of leadership is very difficult to find, number one. But when you throw in the requirements that this person needs to be able to speak doctor talk, right? So preferably some sort of a clinician, advanced practice clinician or a physician, with the technology interest, let's say, or background, or the vision to see what technology can bring to an organization, combined with the energy to do this because it takes a lot of effort, that's really what is needed when you want to try to get physician buy-in, is that leader. And then what that leader needs to do is be able to be an advocate for those clinicians, because, you know, some clinicians want nothing to do with the EHR. All they want to do is take care of the patient and get out of there and go to their office and work, or, you know, see other patients. Or they want to stay in the operating room all the time and don't ever want to leave it. They need to be able to work with those physicians so that they can come to a happy medium of, you know, look, we need to use the EHR for certain things. And, you know, be able to negotiate with them. You know, look, if you maintain the problem list and at least do an H&P in the system and then a progress note, and tell you what, we'll let you dictate your procedure note for now. But 6 months from now, I'd like you to do your procedure notes in the system. If they can speak at that level and have the trust built up within their medical staff, that type of leader is going to be able to drive buy-in and adoption of the system. And this person can't just be a buddy, right? It can't be someone who says, yeah, I know you don't want to dictate, you don't want to put your procedure note in the system. You always want to dictate it. And, you know, and they just can't commiserate. Okay. They've got to work together to drive those initiatives of the C-suite, and then also have the ability to feed back to the C-suite and say, look, this is not flying for your staff physicians. And this is why. I've tried X, Y, and Z. We're not getting anywhere. We need to perhaps go back to the vendor to try to figure out if there's something else we can do. Or maybe we need to reevaluate our initiative here to do X, and well, maybe it's a modified version of X so that our staff can live with it. So tying that all back, leadership is number one. And then the next one is involving your providers from the start. If you're in a situation where you're looking for an EHR or replacing an EHR, don't make the decision in IT. And don't make the decision in the C-suite. Your staff should make the decision. And then you, as the operational component of the hospital and the C-suite, need to be able to operationalize that. Right? Now, I know that's not always possible, but that's where negotiation comes in. Okay? And if you have those clinicians available from the outset to make the decision of, we want to go with a CHR. Okay, great. We'll get the CHR for you, but you must then follow through with participation and implementation, participation in the build, and every other decision that's made in participating in governance committees, and, you know, driving this forward. Because if you don't, we're going to go with a different EHR that might be cheaper, or we might, look at seriously getting other staff in here that will work with us on this project. And it's not always a very nice thing, but you've got to get those providers involved somehow, and some way to involve them. You know, I always say food. Food always works. Arrange your meetings around the time when they're having lunch and provide lunch for them from the cafeteria or someplace perhaps a little bit better, depending on how your organization works. The other thing is if you can tie in continuing medical education, and this is something that leadership and hospitals really don't get. Maintenance of certification for a lot of specialties, the majority of specialties, is pretty cumbersome. And I know that from practicing, if I can find free continuing medical education, I'll go do it because I don't want to pay for something that is just proving that I'm actually maintaining my certification. So if a hospital can partner with an academic center, doesn't even be in the same state, but as long as they have the agendas and the appropriate requirements done, then you can bring in your medical staff for an hour or two and educate them on some component of EHRs, let's say, even maintenance of the problem list and why it's important, right? Tie that into a couple hours of CME, and now the physician has 2 hours of CME, which saves them, you know, money in the background, but also allows them to participate in stuff they're doing for your hospital, driving things forward, and at the same time, doing something that they're required to do, maintaining their certification. And you know, it's a bigger effort than a lot of people realize, and a big factor in physician specialty groups, at the national level now, or they're looking at how they do this maintenance of certification and whether these requirements are too stringent and may change going forward. But right now, if you can tie CME, continuing medical education, into your participation of your clinical staff, into improving adoption and buy-in for EHRs, do it. It's just, that's kind of a no-brainer. A little bit of work, but it's worth doing. And if you're introducing new technology, completely new, out-of-the-box technology, like we were talking about precision medicine, well, find the people who would benefit from that, get them involved, and have them be the champions. Have them champion it, not IT. Because if it's coming from a grassroots effort from the staff, hey, this is going to make patient care a lot better, no one else can argue with it. If it's coming from IT saying, hey, this is really cool, and we think it's going to make it easier to take care of patients, there's going to be some skepticism. So the more that you can do to have any new technology seemingly come from the medical staff, the more likely you are to be able to drive that forward.
I think that's a good place to sort of wrap up there. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Not really. I think that technology is going to continue to advance whether or not we're involved with it. And the more you can do to get involved early on to shape technology and how we use technology, partnering with vendors will give you more of a say in it so that the end product is going to be much better than where we start.
Well, thank you, Dr. Caggiano, and thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. I also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Allscripts, and you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.